Welcome to Destination Murder, the true crime podcast.
Each week the hosts, that's us, BFS Megan
and Tegan,
cover stories from a new part of the world.
Get ready to combat your travel bug and feed your true crime obsession.
Alrighty, hello Tegan.
Hey Megan, how's it going?
Good. It's a nice rainy Saturday morning on the day of our recording, so in my podcast blanket studio, it's very cozy.
Yeah, I'm tucked away in my closet, and I've got a lot of blankets, so it's super comfy in here, too. I don't really want to do anything now that the weather's so bad.
Yeah, plus we have the new COVID restrictions, so we can't really do anything now, yeah. So.
I'm fine hermiting in my house.
I do everything at my house. I leave my house once a week.
That's fun. You left your house this morning to drop off my USB because my computer hates me.
Yeah. Poor Tegan suffers tech issues nearly every single time we record, so
yeah.
Can't wait to see what it'll be today.
I'm excited. Alrighty, I think you're starting this week, right?
Yep. So today, I am covering a case from Oregon, USA. Not Oregon, California, like I said last episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's Oregon in California, and then California's in USA. That's how things work, right?
Yeah. No, all of the US is just New York and California, so I don't know where Oregon is.
Really weird place. I've never been there before. It's totally made up.
Are you ready to hear my story?
I am. I'm so excited.
Okay, so I'm coming to you from, I'm coming to you from Vancouver, but my story today will be in Oregon, USA, specifically Oregon City, USA.
Wow, I didn't even know that was actually a place.
I know. It's kind of funny.
Tacoma, and that's it. Is that even
Tacoma's
in Oregon?
Tacoma's in Washington.
Portland, Oregon. There we go.
Yeah, Portland.
I know my geography.
Yeah, I was in Portland much earlier this year, like February.
That's exciting.
And then my American family lives in Oregon, but they live in Bend, which is like 5-hour drive from Portland, and it's like inland.
Okay.
So I got my sources from a 2002 article by Brian Dax, I think how you say it, and then unsolved.com web archive. So I think that was the old Unsolved Mysteries website, a medium.com article, and then a 2012 article and TV interview by Anna Canzano at KATU News, which I think is a local Oregon station. And then a Murderpedia, of course. Not Wikipedia this time, but Murderpedia, which is my favorite type of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Tegan, I'm going to take you back to Oregon City, Oregon, 2002.
Okay. I'm there mentally.
Yeah. Let me paint you a picture.
Okay.
Oregon City is just south of Portland, Oregon, by only about 20 minutes by car. So, it kind of looks like just a suburb of Oregon on the map, but I'm not sure if an Oregon City person would consider it a suburb. So if you're from Oregon City, please let us know. There's about 30,000 people. So kind of cutesy, small town, suburb kind of feel. Oregon City is right on the edge of, like, the southern edge of Portland, between the city and suburbs, and then more nature areas, like where the Willamette River and then the Clackamas River, I hope is how you say it, combine. So it looks very pretty, like a pretty small town suburb-ish. On January 9th, 2002, 12-year-old Ashley Pond was running late for school. Ashley was popular at school. She was on both the swim team and the dance team. In her school photos, she wore a black, like, stretchy choker necklace. So, you know, in 2002, she was pretty cool at her middle school.
Yeah. She was vibing hard.
She lived in an apartment complex in Oregon City with her mother. That morning, she rushed out the door around 8 a.m. to catch the 8:15 bus to school. She had practice after school. Not sure if it was dance practice or swim practice, because everything just said she had practice after school. But either way, she'd be home for dinner around 6 p.m. and her mom would wait for her at home. At 6:15, however, her mom, Lori, hadn't heard anything from Ashley. She called the school to see if Ashley had got caught up after practice, but was surprised to learn that Ashley had not even shown up to school at all that day. She immediately called the police, telling them that Ashley was missing and none of her stuff was gone, so she couldn't have run away. Luckily, the police believed her. Some articles said that they didn't believe her right away. Some articles said they did, but I think the most common was that they kind of started investigating right away.
Okay. Yeah. I hate when they don't.
Yeah, especially when it's a kid.
Yeah.
Even if your kid runs away, it's 12.
It's still a concern.
Yeah, it's still a concern, of course. And you should still look for them.
Yeah.
I hope it's better now than in 2002.
Yeah, me too.
So the police started to think that she must have been kidnapped. Investigators interviewed some of Ashley's classmates and found out that she had never even made it onto the school bus that morning.
Oh, no.
Assuming that Ashley hadn't made it very far, police started to search for her in their apartment complex, but they couldn't find any information on leads. A community-led search ensued alongside the police search with hundreds of volunteers. Among these volunteers were Ashley's mom, Lori, and Ashley's two good friends, 13-year-old Miranda Gaddis, and I think 13-year-old
Emily Weaver.
Miranda lived in the same apartment as Ashley. Apartment complex as Ashley.
And Emily lived just down the road.
None of these searches unfortunately found anything, though, and detectives moved on to questioning Lori's ex-husband, so Ashley's mom's ex-husband. They looked at Ashley's internet history to see if she had been speaking to any pedophiles in disguise on MSN. And then they finally called in the FBI for help. Nothing turned up anything about Ashley's whereabouts, though. Months went by and still no news. Life returned kind of to normal in the apartment complex in town after the investigation and all these searches has kind of blown over. The dance team that Ashley was on, along with her friends Mallory and Miranda, was to organize a little performance to raise money for a reward fund for their friend.
That's so sad.
I know.
Oh my
God. Can you imagine
God.
Being 13 and one of your friends goes missing and you have to start raising money to help her get back home? It's so sad.
Yeah, that is. That would be devastating.
So the three girls had seemed to be very good friends.
Ashley enjoyed spending time with Emily, and the two would often visit each other's homes. All three of the girls would often have sleepovers at Emily's house.
Mm-hmm.
My assumption would be they'd be watching a lot of movies, like, in the living room all night, as you do when you're 13.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
The girls were so close that Ashley had even gone on vacation with Emily and her family the summer before to California.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Miranda and Ashley were also very similar. Miranda was described as spunky and a girl who loved to dance and wear glitter. And I assume the two girls were your classic 12, 13-year-old girls in the early 2000s.
Yeah. The crazy hair, lots of glitter and feathers. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just picturing like all of Ashley and Mary-Kate and Hilary Duff kind of.
Yeah, with like sparkly butterfly clips in your hair, like a whole bunch of them. And the choker necklace.
And those tops that like would stretch out, you know, like
the bubble tops, like bubble, like one size fits all tops.
Those were so weird.
And just starting to experiment with like blue eyeshadow.
Oh my God. I have so many pictures of me with blue eyeshadow when I was 12. It's embarrassing. I'm sorry, Mom. She used to tell me all the time, Tegan, stop doing that. It does not look good. And I'm like, you don't know anything about fashion.
Mom, you don't know fashion. Come on.
I have three eyeshadow colors, lime green, baby blue, and lavender. And I'm going to wear them all with no mascara. It's fine.
With your completely blonde, invisible eyelashes.
And completely invisible eyebrows. So it was just pale white face. With baby blue. I was the epitome of fashion.
Tegan, you're so fashion forward.
I know, I really am. I'm surprised no one else hopped on that train with me.
So Miranda was described as spunky, and they were kind of your classic early 2000s girls, I would assume. But not only did they both love dance and live in the same apartment complex, but they were raised by single mothers and were both survivors of sexual abuse.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Ashley had been molested by her father, who was now in prison for that crime. Miranda's father had held her hostage when she was six, after the police came to arrest him for the kidnapping and sexual assault of two other minor girls.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Miranda's mother then dated a man named Brett McEnany, who molested Miranda. It's really sad.
That's so awful. Oh my God. To have to go through that much sexual assault trauma before the age of 12.
Mm-hmm. When I think it was Miranda was 10, she apparently wrote a really powerful letter about sexual assault, when she was 10. And the counseling service or the nonprofit that was helping counsel her at school thought it was so powerful that they framed it in their office or something.
Oh my God. Poor baby.
I know. So on March 8th, 2002, about 2 months after Ashley's disappearance, Miranda, who had helped in the search and lived in the same apartment complex, headed off to school. She too left around 8 a.m., but around 1 p.m., a friend of hers told Miranda's older sister that Miranda had never shown up to school. Miranda's sister called their mom, who in turn called the police, and an investigation, including the FBI, immediately ensued.
Oh my goodness.
The city now had two young girls missing, both in the same pattern, from the same exact apartment complex. Both had left to catch the bus to school and had never made it. Everyone was now absolutely certain there was a kidnapper on the loose.
Yeah, 100%.
Because there were no signs of a crime scene, investigators thought the girls were taken by someone they both knew. This was confirmed by the fact that both of their mothers figured it was highly, highly unlikely they would have simply gotten into a car with someone they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. And especially after your friend has been kidnapped, yeah. You'd be more on the lookout for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Miranda would have been very cautious.
Mm-hmm.
After Miranda disappeared, however, the investigation didn't turn up anything else. So the case kind of went cold, and their case got picked up by Unsolved Mysteries. I think there was an Unsolved Mysteries episode on it back in 2002. And no one knew what had happened to them for the longest time. So now jumping forward to August 13th, 2002. So about 8 months after Ashley's disappearance and 6 months after Miranda's disappearance, a woman wearing nothing but a blue tarp wrapped around her ran out into the street just down from the apartment complex and waved down a driver. The driver then dropped her off at a nearby Payless Shoes, and she called the police. The woman told the police that her boyfriend's father had just raped her and then tried to kill her. Her boyfriend had also called 911 to report the incident as well. Her boyfriend, Francis Weaver, was the older sister of Ashley and Miranda's friend,
Emily, and Emily's father is Ward Weaver III.
Who they lived with down the street from the apartment complex.
I think I know this story. I think I watched a Forensic Files episode on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was kind of sounding familiar. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything just yet. But once you said that, I'm pretty sure I know where this is going.
Yeah, that's pretty likely because this case got a lot of media traction.
Yeah.
Because it's literally every suburb's worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
On the 911 call, Francis told police that his father, Ward Weaver, had not only raped his girlfriend, but had confessed to murdering the two missing girls, Ashley Pond and Miranda Gaddis. A week later, police issued a search warrant, and on August 24th, 2002, Miranda Gaddis' remains were found in a trash bag in a shed on Weaver's property. The following day, Ashley Pond's remains were found in a 55-gallon barrel buried underneath a concrete slab on the property, which Weaver had reportedly poured the day after Ashley had gone missing back in January.
Yep, I remember this.
Mm-hmm. Weaver's son had said he helped his father dig a pit in their backyard in January because he told him that they were digging to pour concrete in for a hot tub pad, but there was no hot tub there.
Just one day we're going to get one. We just need to be prepared.
Yeah. It's unclear as to why police didn't zero in on William Weaver sooner. He had an extensive criminal record. He knew both the missing girls. He lived just down the street from them on the street with a bus stop and had been accused by Ashley of sexually assaulting her in the summer of 2001, which the police had never investigated, both when she accused him of it, when she reported it, and as a follow-up after Ashley went missing. He was never investigated for it. Yeah.
Ow, he must have known someone.
I really don't know. Especially because he has an extensive criminal record. They're just like, this guy's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. In addition, the Weaver family vacation that Ashley had joined them on down to California the summer before had involved a visit to Ward Weaver's father, Ward Weaver II, who was on death row in California for murdering two women and burying them in his backyard. Red flags, Tegan.
What? What?
Yeah, so he has done the same thing.
I'm speechless. I know. I didn't know that. What the hell?
If someone's parents murdered someone, you're not automatically guilty for every murder that happens. But why would you not look into this?
Yeah. Okay. All right, then.
Yep. Ward Weaver's ex-wife claims she brought all of this information to the police when the girls first went missing, but they never investigated it. So that's what she says. I'm not 100% sure if that's what happened. Weaver was a subject of investigation at one point, however, but his property was obviously never searched since Miranda's remains seemed to be not very well hidden, just in a shed. A month before the girls' remains were found, in July of 2002, Ward Weaver had welcomed a TV reporter into his home for an interview where he revealed he was apparently the, quote, top suspect, unquote, according to the FBI, but that he had nothing to hide, so that's why the interview was happening in his home. Also in this interview, he openly discussed how he had been accused of raping Ashley and talked about all the sleepovers the girls used to have with his daughter, as well as discussing how his father was a serial killer. Just, like, openly talking about this to the reporter. Kind of weird.
Yeah, that's, like, very much like, hello, I would like to be caught, please.
Mm-hmm, but also, like, gloating about it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Reliving it in his mind as he's talking to the reporter.
Oh my God.
Because in the interview, Tegan, there are scenes of him and the reporter strolling through his property, walking across the concrete pad, which Ashley's body was buried under the whole time. And then he's also just posing casually while talking, leaning against a freezer that he then said he had stored Miranda's body in for some time. Not to the reporter, but later on they figured out that Miranda's body had been in there for a while. So he was, like, gloating in this TV interview.
Those poor mothers having to watch that and this guy. Oh, my God. Disgusting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is a disgusting human being.
So Weaver was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole after he pled guilty to the murders of Ashley and Miranda. I believe he was also charged for the rape and attempted murder of his son's girlfriend as well.
That's good.
So yeah, there's this lovely family tradition of life in prison for him and his serial killer father. And also, his son Francis, who has also continued this tradition. He was sentenced to life in prison for a drug-related murder in Oregon in 2016.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the horrible story of the murders of Ashley Pond and Miranda Gaddis from Oregon City, Oregon.
Wow. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Really sad.
Yeah. Those poor families having to deal with that. And probably him, like, inserting himself into the conversation like that. And probably just, like, glooming over their heads.
Yeah. Because it didn't seem like there was any mention from the FBI themselves about Ward Weaver being the top suspect, like he claimed to be. Also, 10 years later, Miranda's sister, she's become kind of an activist around this case. She apparently got in touch with Ward Weaver and visited him in prison, where he confessed to her that he'd murdered the girls because he thought that Ashley, he'd go to jail for the sexual assault of Ashley, which he continues to deny. that he ever sexually assaulted her. And then apparently he was doing something in his yard and saw Miranda walk by and was worried that Miranda had seen him do something like suspicious. So he murdered her as well and had used Ashley as an excuse to lure Miranda onto his property. He's like, oh, Ashley's here. She like came back and wants to go home. Can you come? She's like scared to walk home alone or something. She would obviously go because she wants to save her friend.
Yeah. Wow. That was really sad, but good job telling it. It's a very interesting story.
Hey everyone, it's editing Megan. I figured I'd just pop in because I forgot to mention during our recording that I did change Wardweaver's daughter's name for this episode. I just forgot to mention it, so now you know. All right, take it away, past Megan and past Deegan.
Alrighty.
Do you need a break or do you want to get right into your case?
I think we can get right into my case.
Yeah, our cases are short and sweet this week because last week was so long.
Mm-hmm. Mine is pretty crazy. So it's my turn to do a case that I'm pretty sure that you know, since we both listen to the same murder podcast. I'm pretty sure you've listened to this one. I'm doing the Richardson family murder. My sources are Murderpedia, Wikipedia, All That Is Interesting, Boredom Therapy, My Favorite Murder, and CBC.
This is in Alberta?
Yep. This is in Medicine Hat.
I don't know it off the top of my head, but I'm sure as soon as you tell it, I'll be like, yes, I know it.
Yeah, okay. So, at 1 p.m. on April 23rd, 2006, a young boy went over to his friend Tyler's house to play. When he got to the home, he thought he saw a body through the window. He ran home and told his mom, who then called the police. Inspector Brent Secondiak was one of the first to arrive on the scene, and he looked into a basement window where he saw at least one person on the ground. He called other officers for backup, thinking that they might be able to save someone in the house, but nobody inside was alive. Police found Mark and Deborah Richardson in the basement of their home, and the body of their son Tyler, who was 8, was discovered upstairs. So it was like an 8-year-old boy who had run over to see his friend. And he found...
Aww.
Yeah. The poor little kid.
Yeah, the poor baby. Also the poor baby who was murdered.
Yeah. Missing from the Medicine Hat home was the couple's 12-year-old daughter, who we will call JR. I toyed with sharing her name or not, because she is a minor, but I decided to keep her anonymous. So, fearing JR was a victim too, the police released a statement that said that they were searching for the Richardson's daughter regarding a serious family matter, and they sent out an Amber Alert. But after recovering evidence in her room and her locker, investigators realized that she was not a victim, but instead her and her boyfriend were the prime suspects.
I don't recognize this case.
Maybe you will a little bit later on.
Okay.
Okay, so JR met her boyfriend Jeremy Stanky, which is an awful name.
Boy, he's stanky.
Yeah. At a punk rock show. Before JR met Jeremy, she was described as a happy and social girl. However, that changed once JR began seeing the 23-year-old, who was 11 years older than her.
I'm sorry, she's 12?
She is 12. He is 23.
Okay, I'm just going to say that is illegal.
Yeah.
Highly illegal.
Very illegal.
Doesn't matter how mature the 12-year-old is, they cannot date a 23-year-old. No, that is so illegal.
I know. JR was instantly taken with the goth lifestyle that Jeremy lived, as she had become a member of the website vampirefreaks.com. Jeremy's upbringing was not a great one. His mother was an alcoholic and her partner abused Jeremy. Kids at school also bullied him, and the combination of these things made Jeremy suicidal. From the age of 13, Jeremy had developed an elaborate persona, wearing a vial of blood around his neck, and he claimed that he was a 300-year-old werewolf.
Okay, I'm starting to recognize it.
So, I mean, he's 23 dating a 12-year-old, which is highly illegal. But if you think that you're a 300-year-old werewolf, dating a 12-year-old is very much worse. But obviously, he was clearly using that as like a coping mechanism to deal with like all the trauma that he had when he was younger, because I don't think you just make that up.
Yeah, but don't date a 12-year-old. Did her parents know?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Okay. So he had allegedly told his friends that he liked the taste of blood, and he also had a user account on vampirefreaks.com. The couple were also found to be communicating through Nexopia. Various messages were sent to each other that were available to the public before their accounts were removed by Nexopia staff. Apparently that was like a chat form thing that like Canadian children used in the early 2000s.
I never had that. I feel like I missed out.
I didn't have any of the social media forums when I was younger. MSN Live? What is that? I don't know.
I had to beg my parents to get MSN when I was 10. And then I was so behind with all of the like chat, like MSN kind of culture.
Yeah.
So I was so excited when I talked to my first person on MSN. I went to school the next day and I was like, hey, we talked on MSN last night. And they were like,
yes.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah. So, and I was like, oh, I was just so excited.
Oh my god. Okay, so JR's username was Runaway Devil, and her account falsely stated that she was 15, and her bio read, "Welcome to my tragic end."
Ooh.
So very teen, very angsty. Very angsty. Very angsty. I mean, even being 15, 23-year-old is not an appropriate age for someone to date. That's, ew, I just realized that we're 24. That's like someone a year, us last year dating a, I just realized how old we were. That's old. Sorry.
Yeah. In my head, I've made us the same age as her, not him. Yeah. That's so weird. I don't know why, but I'm just like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's how I was viewing it, and now, like, viewing it from this other like way, like
that's really gross.
Gross. That's so gross. Anyways, according to her friends, her parents had prohibited her from seeing Jeremy due to the age disparity when found out about the relationship. Her friends also had criticized their relationship, so obviously they're very smart. Being prohibited from being together did not fly for Jeremy and JR because they were madly in love.
Mm.
Livid at her parents, Jeremy wrote on his blogging platform on April 3rd, 2006, "Payment. My lover's rents are totally unfair. They say that they really care, but they don't know what is going on. They just assume. Their throats I want to slit. Finally, there shall be silence. Their blood shall be payment."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Very emo. Someone should have called the police.
Yeah. Very emo, but also like red flag.
Legs. Yeah. Red flag city. A trail of digital evidence led to JR and Jeremy, mainly consisting of email exchanges between the two. They were tracked down and arrested in Jeremy's truck the following day in the community of Leader, Saskatchewan, about 130 kilometers away.
So this is after the murder now?
Yeah, so a day after the murder, they were arrested.
Okay.
Later on May 3rd, 2006, Jeremy's friend Casey Lancaster, who was 19, was charged with being an accessory for driving them away in her pickup truck later in the day and for disposing evidence. So piecing together events, the police found that Deborah was killed first after being stabbed at least a dozen times. Mark fought back with a screwdriver, but he was stabbed to death as well. And apparently, this is really gross, but apparently he had been stabbed so many times that when police found him, there was no blood left in his body. so he completely bled out.
Oh my God.
Both parents' bodies were found in the basement. Upstairs, in his blood-soaked bed, their son had his throat slashed open.
Oh my God.
Jeremy reported later that he had killed the parents while JR was upstairs in her brother's room, murdering him.
What did the little boy ever do?
I know. It's so sad. According to police reports, it was JR who first proposed the plan. In an email, she told Jeremy she had a plan. "It begins with me killing them and ends with me living with you," she wrote. Jeremy was receptive to the idea, replying, "Well, I love your plan, but we need to get a little more creative with, like, the details and stuff."
Ew, he's, like, living out his 300-year-old vampire fantasy in his head.
300-year-old werewolf fantasy. But he just likes vampires as well. So just hours before committing the murders, Jeremy and some friends reportedly watched the 1994 film Natural Born Killers about a couple who go on a violent killing spree. Jeremy told his friends that he and his girlfriend should go about their plans in a similar manner, but without sparing her little brother. Yeah. Jeremy also said to an undercover officer, "You ever watch the movie Natural Born Killers? I think that's the best love story of all time."
Oh.
Disgusting.
He's got such a warped way of thinking.
Yeah.
I don't think... Does the consequence of murdering someone, not just, like, the legal consequences, but do these people fully understand that it's not, like, a movie?
I don't think so.
They're not just actors. It's not a story. Like, someone is actually not going to live anymore when you act out this dumb little psychotic fantasy.
Yeah. I think that he probably had a lot more idea that it was a permanent thing, but JR
but not JR. Yeah.
Did not understand fully what was going on. So shortly after the arrest, Jeremy asked her to marry him, and she agreed. I'm so glad that it is illegal to marry someone at that age, because...
Yeah, this isn't the 14th century anymore.
Yeah. Yucky. Also, witnesses testified that the two had admitted to the murders, and one witness recounted Jeremy saying that the victims had been gutted like a fish.
Oh.
Under the Youth Criminal Justice Act, JR's name could no longer be published in Canada after she became a suspect. Under the same act, 12 is the youngest possible age in which a person can be charged with a crime. Convicts who were under 14 at the time they committed a crime cannot be sentenced as adults and cannot be given more than a 10-year sentence. So on July 9th, 2007, JR, who had by then turned 13, was found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder in the killings. At her 2007 trial, JR pled not guilty, saying that she had hypothetical conversations about killing her family, but she didn't ever intend on going through with it. But she was found guilty by a jury for 3 counts of first-degree murder and was given the maximum sentence for youth, 6 years in jail, followed by 4 years of supervision in the community. She was 13 when she was convicted.
Wow.
So in 2008, Jeremy was convicted of 3 counts of first-degree murder as well. As he was 25 at the time of the conviction, he was sentenced to life in prison without parole for 25 years.
Good.
Yeah. Casey Lancaster, the accessory to the murder charge, the couple's friend, she pled guilty to an obstruction of justice charge in Medicine Hat and received 1 year house arrest as a part of a plea bargain and was ordered to refrain from drugs and alcohol. In September 2011, JR began attending classes at the Mount Royal University in Calgary, Alberta. During the final years of her sentence, she was released from the 10-year sentence at a psychiatric hospital in the fall of 2011, and in October 2012, it was reported that her rehabilitation was going well, and she expressed remorse for her actions, and the experts considered it genuine. JR underwent extensive rehabilitation and treatment after she was sentenced. Psychiatric assessments revealed that she was diagnosed with conduct disorder and opposite defiant disorder. In May 2016, at the age of 24, JR was freed from the criminal justice system. She is thought to be the youngest person in Canada ever to be convicted of multiple first-degree murder counts.
Wow.
And that's the end of that.
It's always the boyfriend.
Yep.
How did they meet again?
At a punk rock show.
Wow. She is brave. I would not be 12 years old going to a punk rock show with all of these, like, 20-somethings.
I don't even know how she managed to get in. Like, was she with her parents? Like, how did she even get to go to that?
Maybe it wasn't 19 plus, or I guess 18 plus in Alberta.
I don't know. Maybe not. Weird.
But yeah, he definitely ruined her life completely.
Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely not innocent either, but there's no way that she would have, well, maybe there was, but like, I don't see any possible way that she would have ever killed her parents and younger brother if she was never
with him,
involved with the boyfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you remember it at the end?
A little bit. I remember the 300-year-old vampire, or 300-year-old werewolf who carries a vial of blood around his thing. I don't think I realized that was in Canada, though.
Yeah. When I was looking for cases, I stumbled across that one, and I saw the 300-year-old werewolf thing, and I was like, I remember this. I want to cover it, because I didn't remember much about it, so that's why I picked this one. I don't know. A very, very weird story.
Yeah, really sad and really frustrating.
Yep. Yeah, so on to happier things.
Where's Harry Styles today, Tegan?
Oh, uh-oh.
Okay, well, you look that up. I will talk about the Queen's Gambit because after you mentioned it last episode and recommended it to me, I watched it and I love it. I watched the entire thing overnight. Someone needs to, like, child lock my Netflix and stop me from watching it after 1 a.m. because I stayed up till like 5 in the morning binging it.
It's so good.
It's so good, except there's a severe diversity problem. There's literally only 2 non-white characters in that entire TV show.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of, like, woman characters. But then again, that's kind of the point of the show, is because she's beating all these men.
Yeah. And it's not really a woman's world that she was in.
No.
She was in the man's world. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was done really well. I don't think it's going to have a second season, because I don't think that can go from there. But yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
I really liked the storytelling, and I liked how they would bring characters back, because when you were first introduced to, like, the Benny guy, the one with the, like, hat,
yeah,
I didn't think he would be as big of a figure in her life as he was.
Yeah. No, it was a really good storyline, and I really liked the cinematography also in this one. Like, it was a very cool
way it was filmed. And the fashion.
I know. I was just like, I want all of her clothes.
Yeah. And the fashion made sense. Like, you could see her progress and, like, from being very unfashionable, and then you could see her wanting to be more fashionable and more like the other women. And she gets more glamorous the better at chess she gets, essentially.
Yeah.
So she's, like,
confident in her femininity and her womanhood.
Yeah, exactly.
While she's beating all these men. Yeah, it was a good show.
In other news, where's Harry Styles today, Tegan? Do you know? Do you have any updates?
You know what? I don't actually know. What I can tell you is that he was the first male to ever be on Vogue magazine.
Yes.
And that photo shoot was amazing.
I like the one of him. He's, like, standing in a field in a ball gown.
Mm-hmm. The custom Gucci dress that was made just for him. I think my favorite thing, I'm not sure if you saw them, I'll probably send you a picture, but they're a pair of pants by the designer Bode. And they're custom made for him. And he gave the designer a whole bunch of pictures and information about him that were important to him. And they, like, painted all these things onto his pants. So it's got his goddaughter's name on them. Like, pictures of his dog that he had when he was growing up. Aww. His mom's birthday, his dad's birthday, his mom's husband that she remarried to, who passed away a couple years ago. His name was Robin, and so there's a Robin on the pants. Like, they're really beautiful. So that was quite cool. He's so handsome. What else? Have we read anything? Have we watched anything else?
I've been so bored with everything lately. How do you feel about that COVID vaccine?
I don't know. I didn't even really know it. I saw a TikTok about it. That was how I found out about it.
Tegan gets all her news from TikTok.
Yeah, I do.
Fair enough.
I'm a little lost, but fair enough. Tell me more.
I just saw that. I'm kind of like you. I just saw news about it, talked about it with my colleagues at work, how the Pfizer vaccine is, like, hopeful, I think, for, like, end of December or January. But I'm kind of, like, in a very pessimistic view. I'm like, cool, let me know when it's finalized and people are giving it out. I don't want to care about, like, oh, the new release date of the vaccine is January 1st, 2021. Oh, sorry, the new vaccine release date is February 23rd, 2021.
Yeah.
I don't want to know because then it just gets so depressing.
Yeah. I've tried to avoid taking in a lot of the information. Like, I'll keep up to date with, like, the guidelines and what we should be doing, but I don't think that, like, in my ear every single day talking about how many cases there are and, like, where everything stands right now is just not, it's not making my life any better. So I've just been trying to avoid it because it makes me very upset.
Yeah. It's taking a big mental health, like, it's a big impact on everyone's mental health, whether or not they realize it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
it's a lot. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the same mindset, kind of like keeping up with the guidelines, making sure I'm safe and everything, but I just don't want to know.
Yeah.
Which is also a very, like, coming from a big place of privilege, I guess, because we can just kind of pretend like it's not happening in our brains, just staying home.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't do that. So I'm thankful that I can.
Yeah, very true.
I have just been thinking about my case from last week so much. Just like, I don't know what happened to Chris and Lisanne. If you haven't listened to it yet, go listen to it and please let us know what you think. My sisters, the twins, came into my room last night at like midnight. Erin comes in. My door's closed. She comes in, opens the door, doesn't say anything, closes the door, keeps walking, sits down on my desk chair. I'm like lying in bed. I'm like, what's going to go up? What's going to happen? She sits down and she crosses her legs, puts her hands on her legs and goes, so, I disagree with you. There has to be foul play. And I was like, okay. And right. Then the other twin, Laura, comes in and like puts her 2 cents in. And we were talking there for like, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. Both of them are like, oh, there must have been something that happened. Something different.
Yeah.
They couldn't have just gotten lost.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot too. I've actually had some family reach out and ask me about it. They're like, well, like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know. My cousin thinks that they just got lost, but I think I think they got lost, but I think that there's something more. So should we
pull? I think we should. I was just looking at the time and we're like we've passed an hour. So I was like, let's
wrap it up. Yep. Last time, I think it was like 3 hours of recording that we did.
I think it was 2.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Okay, Tegan, are you ready for your country for next week's episode?
Yes. Are you trying to give me a hint of where I have?
No, I haven't pulled it yet.
Oh, okay. I was like, the mother country.
Is it British or Australian, mate? I'm sorry to everyone listening. Okay, you have Belize. Belize is in Central America.
Yeah. My Nana's friend lives there for like 6 months of the year. Exciting. Cool. I don't know much about any murders that have happened down there. I feel like we've really just stuck to North and South America.
Yeah. Well, we had Africa and Australia, but really...
It's fine. We'll get to the other parts of the world later. We're trying to be smart with our airfare, you know? Stay close by.
Yeah, we don't have enough in the budget for flights to Asia right now.
Anywho's.
I have Manitoba, Canada.
Mm.
So yeah, tune in next week. Tegan is going to take us to Belize, and I'm going to take us to Manitoba.
Lovely.
So exciting.
Yeah, so rate, comment, subscribe. Follow us on whatever streaming site you like listening to. But yeah, we really appreciate all the positive feedback that we've gotten and all the lovely comments and ratings. So keep it up, please.
Follow us on Instagram. We're more active. That's our most active platform. So if you want to interact with us, follow us at Destination Murder Pod.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also send us an email if you want to get in touch. It's dest_murder@gmail.com. So dest_murder.
If you want your voice, or I guess not your voice, if you want your words on a podcast, hit us up. Maybe we'll share them. Maybe we won't.
Maybe. No guarantees.
Yeah. Depends on
this
how we're
our
feeling.
Our podcast, not yours. But if you want to send in a little descriptor of where you live that we might be able to use in a future episode, that would be great, because we'd always love to hear about the place from someone who lives there rather than us, like, mansplaining it to you. Goodbye.
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 See you next week. Can't wait to fill your ear holes with stories of murder.
Oh my god, that is so gross every time you say it, but I love it. See you in your ear holes next week. Friends.
Bye. Family.